Welcome to another fine edition of my so-called 8-bit life. Joining me today, and I swear I might, this is the first time I can actually knock one off the hit list, which I never thought I would do this so early.
Was on a hit list?
Well, it's just Justin Robert Young. Justin Robert Young, say hey. Hi to everybody online. I say the hit list, like everyone, every podcaster, every geek, every sort of person that does something creative has a hit list, a list of people that they would love to just pick their brains, chat with, or geek out in fashion. And of course, I'm no different. I know you guys have done on your podcast many times getting, you know, you're like, oh my God, we got X person. This is amazing. And like, I'm risking having a yellow laser episode.
Yellow laser.
See, that's a reference to a Twit podcast. There's an episode, a podcast called This Week in Tech, run by Leo Laporte, former Tech TV guy, whatever.
No one who's listening to this doesn't know who Leo Laporte is.
That's true. I guess that's assumed. He had this episode way back when where he had Steve Wozniak on for the first time. You know, geek god, if you will.
Of course.
And somehow the whole episode turned out really bad. I thought it was okay, but a lot of people didn't like it because Leo fanboyed out. He kept letting, okay. You know, he didn't really talk about tech. He didn't really hit any hard-hitting issues. He just talked about Steve Wozniak's yellow laser. Hence the name of the episode was Yellow Laser, and a lot of people slammed him for it. Because he was very, very geeking out. And since I kind of respect you, and I really do respect you, and I do follow a lot of your content, there sure. is always a risk of fanboying out. Like, has it ever happened to you where you've had a guest on or somebody that you've...
Well, yeah, you know, I think probably the biggest thing where I know that me and Brian on NSFW felt that being just total geeks, you know, got in the way was with KG when Trainwreck was on, which was kind of awkward on two levels. Number one, there's the quality of the show, which you always want to be at its highest, especially when you have somebody on who you like. You know, like you want that episode to be super, super awesome because you kind of want to demonstrate worth on some level, right? But the other part about it was that, like, we didn't want to just super make it a, oh my God, Tenacious D, man, Tenacious D, even though that was why we were so super big fans of KG, and for both me and Brian, you know, Tenacious D specifically was very, very, you know, influential to me in my formative years between late high school and through college. And it was one of like the main kind of like bonding points with me and my, random college roommate who went on to become one of my really, really good friends. But also for Brian, apparently Tenacious D was very influential to him at the point in which he decided to quit his job and become a full-time magician.
See, I didn't know that about Brian, that the D was his influence for quitting Dell. I always knew he'd quit Dell to go into magic and do his thing. I didn't realize that it was the stylings of Jack Black and Kyle Gass.
I don't know if one day he was just like, he's listening to the tasty grooves of Tenacious D, and he's just like, you want to know what? Fuck this gig. I'm following my dreams, bitches.
Like he's putting on Lee, and he's like, fuck yeah, that's it. I'm out of here.
Exactly. And that's, he's playing. And like Lee as he's kicking over, you know, in boxes and, you know, like punching those fake cubicle walls in. Oh, in your face. I think it was kind of more of one of those, you know, like, and I'm sure you have it where, you know, there are elements of your life where it becomes the soundtrack. And that's where so many, you know, I think that's when somebody like loves a really shitty song, you can almost always be assured it was like there's some other reasoning to it.
And that's how you know, totally.
Like, you know, and it happens to all of us. I mean, like, there's songs that, like, you know, I was just talking with my little brother, and I don't even know where it came from, but I really, really, really like Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. Like, I really like it.
You and, gotta,
like,
have a story to this, though. I mean, you can't have,
you wanna,
like,
know what? I don't. Except I do have this, and this is something I don't know if I've really talked about much on NSW or Weird Things, but a few years ago, I've always really liked Christmas, so I guess that's part of the reason why I like the Mariah Carey thing. I don't know why I like the Mariah Carey thing, except maybe it was one of those things where, like, when I was growing up in, like, middle school, Mariah Carey was, like, one of the, like, you know, in the mind of the middle school boy of my era, like, one of those, like, untouchably gorgeous women. You know, like, I'm sure, you know, Megan Fox was to girls or to guys a few years ago in middle school, where, like, you know, and I don't know how, where you are age-wise.
See, that's also another thing I wanted to bring up. For the longest time, I thought you were older than me. Like, I thought you were like Brian's age.
Okay.
As it turns out, we're about the same age. I'm 28 right now. And it's bizarrely frightening that every time I, like, when I first met you at South by Southwest, it was weird. I was like, this guy's older than me somehow. I don't know. I guess you looked older than me, but I later heard you literally talk about Superman and how they were casting a role and that you're age appropriate. And it was like 20. I was like, 28. Like, oh shit. He's acting my age.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think I'm older because of the voice.
See, I don't even know if it was the voice, the beard, the comish. I think it was just more so because of you and Brian interact. Because Brian, like if I've been, you know, I talked to him, he's always like, God, you're like the kid brother. You're like, you're part of the kid brother club. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking in my head, like, but he's never called Justin the kid brother on air. And it's, you know,
well,
so.
You know, and I don't know what that is. I mean, I think maybe, like, I have a bit of a brash personality. So maybe it's just people kind of respond to that. That element of that cocksure quality and just kind of confuse it with age. But all right, here, we're folding. The universes are folding.
It's okay.
Let me start banging out these stories real quick. Okay, so the Mariah Carey thing. A couple years ago, when I was, it was one of my first apartments back down south. I had an apartment up in, when I lived in, I worked in New York City. And I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey. I had an apartment there, and that was the first time that I was like an adult, and I'm like, you know what, motherfucker, I'm doing Christmas. So I got a Christmas tree, decorated, me and my roommates decorated the entire apartment. And so this was the first time down south that I'd done it. I didn't get a tree, but I did want to get some shit for outside. I wanted to kind of decorate my apartment outside. And I got this intensely creepy Santa. Like, and it wasn't, it was one of those light up Santas, one of those big plastic light up Santas. And it just had, it has its hand up as if it's like saying hello, but the eyes are just solid black. It's like, it's like a Quint from Jaws, like cold black eyes, like a dog's eye. Like it has, so I call it Creepy Santa, and me and my roommate at the time, you know, we joked about Creepy Santa, and then it came time after, you know, after the year was done that, you know, Creepy Santa had to leave the porch, but I really liked the Santa. So I've actually just kept it in my room forever. Like, it's still there. Like,
so basically where people have like, oh, look, there's my poster of Star Wars, or hey, there's, or if you go to Jock's thing, like, there's my poster of my favorite sports team, or, you know, Pamela Anderson. Had the creepy Santa in your room, or like, so whenever you bring like a lady back, like, oh yeah, finally gonna go, she'll just look in your room and just see this Santa just staring dead at her.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that happens often. And let me tell everybody this, okay? And this goes for a lot of things, but specifically if you have a glowing, creepy Santa.
Wait, it glows?
Oh, it glows. Yeah.
Oh,
no.
God, no.
Yeah, no, it actually glows.
Please don't tell me it talks.
It does not talk, but it does eerily glow. I wanted to make it more creepy.
That's so all it needs. It's just a ho, ho, ho. And it's like, Devil Santa, get away.
Well, all right, so I put one of those cords of like LED lights. It's like an LED blue light cord. And I just coiled it around Santa and or inside the Santa, because the light went out. And so now does it glow, but it eerily gets like slowly brighter and then slowly fades. So I had that, and that's in my room like now. And it's still in there. So what happened, or here with ladies, so it's like, there's only one way to handle that. Like, you can't tell the whole story. So you just basically, they're like, well, what the hell's that? And you're like, don't worry, that's Creepy Santa. And then just change the topic.
See, this is the thing. Like, I have friends of mine who have like pinheads in their room, or have the puzzle box like ready to, you know, open the gates of hell. And you actually have like a essentially Satan Santa in your bedroom with this eerie blue glow, where you don't really know how to explain it. Like, has ever a girl just gone to you, or anyone, like what's that? Like, that's Creepy Santa. And go like, why the fuck do you have, what the fuck is that? Why is there a Creepy Santa in your bedroom?
Because if you say it with enough confidence, people don't worry about it. And I've yet to try and live with a girl with Creepy Santa. I suspect if I were to start cohabitating with a girl, like that would probably be one of those. Like, you know, they talk about like, oh, you need to sacrifice makes relationships and everything.
That would be your sacrifice, Creepy Sandy.
I have a feeling that that would be on the big draft board of like shit that needs to go.
But would you fight? But here's a question. Would you fight for Creepy Santa? Let's say for example, you hook up with some girl and she has a list. Okay. You know, she gives you a whole list of stuff and, you know, some of it looks good, whatever. And then on the list is Creepy Santa and big bold letters. If this doesn't go, it's over. Would you fight for Creepy Santa?
You know, I don't know.
I mean, it's been in your life for so long.
Here's the deal. If there's room enough for like an office or an element of the living room, I'm keeping Creepy Santa at some point. Or maybe I'll do this. Maybe it's like, all right, it's compromised though, lady. So it won't be in the bedroom, but I'll keep it in the closet or something. Like somewhere where it's like, if she wants to sacrifice other people being embarrassed by it, like seeing it in the living room, like I'm going to put it in a closet where she's going to be. It's like she's going to have her own relationship with Creepy Santa if it moves out of the public eye.
But here's a question. Would you like hook up a battery to it and like have it time?
It's plugged in no matter what. Like, it's plugged in.
That's what I had to ask. Cause like,
oh no, it glows. Like Creepy Santa will glow forever. All right. So do you have like you have a website where you put these up, right?
Yeah.
My so-called Abit Life. I'll give you a picture of Creepy Santa.
Okay, I'll definitely want to take a picture.
Or maybe even a video. Maybe I'll take an iPhone.
Take a video because like the thing
just
is
so that, you can see the glow at.
The thing is that like I have in my image and this is the image like when you said living room, like I have my image, you're gonna pull like a Christmas story and like place it in like right in the window and just for all the neighbors to see as like your glorious leg trophy lamp.
Okay, here's all right, you wanna know what the other fucking thing about this story is?
Oh god, yes.
How much of a fucking weirdo I am. So this year I wound up doing a bunch of Christmas stuff and I got a tree for the first time since I've been down here in South Florida. And, I decorated up. I had a big Christmas party. A bunch of my friends came over and everybody brought ornaments. It was a fun time. And so for the party, just so people knew which house it was, I had a bunch of people who didn't know which house I lived in. I put Creepy Santa out on the driveway so people would know. And then I thought, like, it's Christmas, and everywhere up and down my block, there's people with Christmas lights and shit out. But I'm like, I can't part with Creepy Santa.
And so
I need to have it. It's become like a nightlight for me. I have to have it in there. And that's about it. I have that. I'll tell you, now that I think about it, I have had at least one girl who has spent a few nights in my room, demand that I turn it off because the light bothered her.
And did you like, no, we're not turning off Creepy Santa. He's been here longer than
that,
you.
I won't be that weird, but I'm close to that weird. I'm bordering on close to that weird.
See, I'd be that weird just because it would just be such a funny joke to see how they react. As much as I get laid, all that stuff, it'd just be way too tempting to pass that up to say, no, Creepy Santa's been here longer than you and he will remain here beyond you.
You want to know what? Once you get away with having Creepy Santa in the room for, you know, a little while, and I've gone through like relationships, like, and that, if I remember correctly, Creepy Santa might have come in the middle of the room. So like she had to just deal with me evolving into this almost unmanageable creep. All right, real quick. So Creepy Santa, I'm watching this year. I really like, I'm thinking like in my head, like it's like I have this Christmas spirit and I'm like, all I want for Christmas is, and I hear it on the radio because they play it all the time.
Right.
So I look at the video, and the video is very, very stock. You know, obviously it was shot in 2 days, sometime in 1996. But they have like a part of the visual element of it is that this kaleidoscope view. And it's like, so I guess it's trying to, you know, harken back to remembering Christmases of yore and everything. So it has all these, you know, like the Christmas tree and ornaments and stuff like that.
But the typical Christmas images.
The first fucking image of the All I Want for Christmas Is You video is Creepy Santa. So that really just cemented how much I like that.
Because of Creepy Santa.
Because of Creepy
God, I just love the fact that you have a creep. I love the fact that you've named it Creepy Santa, and like it's because it almost has a myth of its own. Like
it is. It's its own kind of thing, and I'm shocked I haven't talked about it on NSFW. I think it's on my Facebook. If people are friends with me on Facebook, but,
it's just. I mean, we all have strange things. Like a couple of years back, and this is actually I'll tell you a Christmas story for myself. A couple years back, back in Laredo, I actually got a gift from my parents. They'd already given me like all my main gifts, but they said, well, there's one more thing under the tree. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going underneath the tree and picking it out, and the box is labeled fragile. And my dad said, it's fragile, it must be Italian. And it didn't click in my head what he meant. Like, it totally did not – went over my head, and this is how sad it was, because I'd seen A Christmas Story 80 million times by that point. I mean, TBS plays it fucking – 24 hours. It's one of those things I obsess over. And so I open the box, and inside's a leg lamp.
Oh, yes, with the lady.
Yes,
with
like
the stocking.
Exactly, yeah. Stockings and everything. And it's in my living room as we speak now, because it was such an awesome gift. I was like, oh my God, like my parents got me leg lamps. Every time I've had friends come over that have just, you know, come in the apartment for the first time, and they see the lamp, they're like, you have a leg lamp from A Christmas Story? I go, yeah, my mom got me. Like, your mom's pretty fucking cool. I was like, yeah. Like that's my, like, that's not really a creepy Santa, because everyone knows that pop culture reference, whether or not you know, you grew up and all that stuff like that. But I'm just amazed that you haven't like displayed in the living room during Christmas, like each year, and just been like, what is that? That bluey glowy thing. Oh, that's creepy Santa. And like everyone, you know, you just have to let everyone deal with it, or not like even made it more creepy. Like, you haven't, like, added – like, you should add a voice to it. Like, give, like, a soundtrack of just, like, this really monotonous ho, ho, ho. Like, yeah. Oh, God, that – creepy Santa. Like, I'm amazed.
It's pretty – I don't know. It's certainly – it's one of those elements of my life that in my mid to late 20s is eccentric. And as I move steadily into my early to mid to late 30s, will just become a really it's going to get increasingly less cute, as everything does.
Well, yeah, I know, of course. I mean, everything goes down, and everything kind of goes.
At some point, shitting yourself is cute.
Exactly.
And that is pretty much the first thing to go.
Well,
right?
I don't know. Eventually, you're supposed to theoretically, you're supposed to get back to being shitting yourself is okay. Like when you hit 60.
Yeah, no, but that's never cute. It's still sad when you're an old. I mean, like it's understandable more when you're old. But no one's like, oh, look, Grandpa shit himself. Yay! Let's all laugh about it.
I don't know. I think that's
no
quite
one
comical.
Tells funny stories. No, but I mean,
I get what you mean. I know. I get it. I mean, after 60, if you have a colostomy bag, it's not the happiest thing in the world.
But a baby, it's almost funny. Oh, who had an accident?
But like, it's funny you bring up the whole age thing, and it's funny you bring up all these sort of names. I actually have a really big question to ask, since we kind of grew up around the same era, and you have a million and 20 different nicknames given to you by Brian.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a time, and so I know you're a big wrestling fan, I think we're talking about the pre-show names and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever done the whole Rob Van Dam thing with like your initials in the name and just point you with thumb and say J-R-Y?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Even before I went, yeah, I started going by Justin Robert Young because – and you want to – here, we'll do a fun little live experiment.
All right.
Justin Young – well, number one, Justin was a very, very popular name for boys when we were growing up.
Yeah, I know a million 20 people named Justin.
There's a ton of Justins. But here, let me look. Number one, there's a Hawaiian singer named Justin. I'm looking at it now. Justin Kawika Young, right? And there's also apparently a gay porn star named Justin Young. So I kind of – and also the other problem with Justin Young is that it's racially ambiguous to a certain extent. Like Young is a fairly popular black name and a fairly popular Asian last name.
You know, I do need to ask, and I think it's something I've always wanted to clear up. What nationality exactly are you? Are you like a mix, or are you actually like, you know, the Young family Harkins from Sweden or something?
No, I am primarily Italian, specifically Sicilian, and a little bit German worked in there somehow. I actually have a family. My dad's side of the family lived in Germany. We're a mixture of Italian and German. We lived in Germany and then moved to Chile, the South American nation of Chile, where they you know, get the miners stuck in holes for laughs.
You know, actually, that's not uncommon for Germans to move to.
Well, you want to know what, though? Around the mid-40s is when they did it, which is always fun. Where you know, and I've kind of fallen out of touch with a lot of my dad's side of the family, but it was one of those things where it's like, so what did Grandpa do for a living when he had to get the fuck out of Germany real quick in the mid-40s and move to South America?
You know? I get that.
Just saying.
But I'm, like I'm saying, I only say that because like in my family, I have my mom's side of the family, there's a lot of family in Mexico, and I know for a fact a lot of Germans end up living in Mexico and have done so in Mexico many a times. So I mean, that's why I say it's not uncommon to have people of European descent in general move to your Mexicos and your South Americas of the world, just because it's, you know, better climate and I guess the exchange rate's better. I don't really know exactly. But it's not a totally uncommon thing. But getting back to your whole like name taking, like, did you just? I'm assuming Robert is your middle name.
Robert's my middle name, and I I've always kind of liked how it sounded. Like it sounded, you know, like it kind of rolled off the tongue, like Justin Robert Young. You know, there we go. So I decided to start going by that. I mean, really, just for Google, you know, like because you know Justin Young. I'm not on, you know, if I search through here, there's a lot of Justin Youngs. And
no, yeah, it's a very, very common combination name. Or if you look up Justin Robert Young, adding that middle name, like Kevin Rose, I think his first name is like Robert, for example. I know.
Oh,
he
really?
Yeah, I think it's like it's either Robert Kevin Rose. I'm pretty certain he goes by his middle name, just because Robert's such a damn common name. I might be mistaken, but I know he's said many a times, like on Dignation, "Hello, this is Robert Kevin Rose." You know, and then of course Alex was Alex Jennings. You know, I think it's Alexander Jennings Albrecht or something like that. I tells you how much I watched Ignatian. So I mean, it's not uncommon for people to bring their middle name or exemplify. Like I know Leo goes by Leo because no one knows how to pronounce Leo for some fucked up reason.
Yeah. So I was totally. I mean, like if you so Justin Robert Young, I'm it. I'm the only game in town for that.
But
so.
The question is that like at what point did you start doing that? Like, did you do it like in high school, in college? Was it like well after you've established yourself? You're like, well, I guess I'm getting kind of, you know, kind of doing some writing. Was it after journal?
It was when I started writing blogs, like, cause I definitely didn't do it through college. Like all my college writing credits and whenever I wrote for newspapers, I believe that's all Justin Young. I started going by Justin Robert Young. When I got out of college, I mean, I got a degree in newspaper journalism from the Newhouse, the prestigious Newhouse School.
See, that's also something I've noticed that is similar. Like, you got a journalism degree. Actually, I got my degree in English. So it's kind of funny that there is that connection of two.
A degree in newspaper journalism is only slightly less useless than your degree in English. So
exactly.
I feel like I have a slight leg up on you. My industry is currently in the process of dying, where people paying for English majors is probably well dead.
See, that's why I'm glad my minor is in MIS and in computers and whatnot. That industry continues going on, but it's funny that like when you said like I've heard you in the past say you're a journalism major, like, oh wow, well, that's kind of cool, and I'm kind of an English major, so there's that connection there.
Yeah, well, I mean. So I got out of college. I got a degree in newspaper journalism, and I wanted to go into. I basically looked at the landscape in terms of newspapers, and found that there was a very very rigid path, and I knew what was on it, and I kind of didn't want to walk it now. What I thought that path was, and to a certain extent, especially at the point where I started, it was certainly more true than it is now, was that, like, you know, I would get a job at a smaller paper, you know, possibly if I really wanted to work some angles at some of the places that I had internships at, I probably would have had maybe more of a shot to work at one of those. But, like, the job that I could have walked into backwards was covering cops in Utica, New York. And
Wait. Do you mean like by cops? Do you mean like bad boys? What you're gonna do? Kind of cops or?
No, I mean like you know, a beat report. So I would go and check out the arrest reports and, you know, do stuff like that, and I cover crime, which I had done at Syracuse. I mean, I worked at the Daily Orange. If there's any young and impressionable listeners who, you know, want to, you know, get a really, really good, a good education in newspaper journalism, I encourage them, if they are you know, want to go to Syracuse, to not go to the Newhouse School of Journalism. Although some of the professors there I really like, and just rather major in whatever the fuck you want and go to the Daily Orange, which is where I really got any education that I got in terms of journalism.
Right.
It's the best independent student newspaper.
Well, because that's where like it's funny. My only real like rough kind of experience with, you know, writing in what's the format for newspapers? Is it ARP? I think. God, I forget what the fuck it's MLA in English. I forget what the thing you're supposed to follow when you write a newspaper article. Like, what's the
AP style?
AP style. Thank you. Yeah. Like my only like experience writing an AP was specifically I took a journalism class in college. In that class, you actually wrote for the school paper for that semester. And we all had to write articles that would eventually be published. Wasn't the biggest paper in school. No one really read it. And I remember, like,
where'd you go again?
I went to this little college called Texas A&M International University. It's over there in Laredo, Texas. It's a satellite school for Texas A&M.
Gotcha.
And I remember the things I wrote in there. I remember I wrote a review on Firefly, Serenity, the movie, which apparently I was the best review people had read about it. So kind of fun. And this strange article about that had like the most controversy of the college, because I literally brought a tape recorder. It was for like the planetarium. Apparently it was losing money. And eventually the guy got fired for what I wrote. So it was a bit bizarre. You know?
Nice. Speaking truth to power.
Well, no, it wasn't that. The thing is that this is maybe.
Bring him down. Give him hell, Vincent.
Robert, that's fair enough. We were talking.
Do you go by Vincent or Robert?
I go by Robert. Vincent, God, this is funny. I was talking at one point to somebody about like how I got my username. My username, for people that don't know and can't remember, is Vincent404. And you know, you have those like usernames that you thought like back in high school were cool and have stuck with you ever since because you've just never wanted to change them, and you still have that AIM profile from years ago and you're like, well, I don't want to really give it up anymore. I guess I'll keep it going for longer. I remember one. I'd love to say that it's because of Vincent Valentin from Final Fantasy VII. I'd love to say it's because of Vincent Vega for Pulp Fiction fame.
Sure, yeah.
But in all honesty, I went to sleep. I go, God, I need a username. Vincent404 popped in my head that night. I said, cool. Checked the next day. It was completely free. And
see, I like it. I think it's cool. It sounds like somebody in a future movie would go to you for information.
like I'm
oh, there's only one guy who knows where the bits run in this town. Who? Vincent 404.
So that's basically
smash cut, exterior, raining. Our hero walks into a dingy nightclub.
Fuck yeah, Blade Runner style. Yeah, God, that's surprising. That's actually my favorite movie. And actually, that brings up a weird story. You have a creepy Santa. I have the Blade Runner umbrella.
Nice.
I had a friend of mine, actually. A lot of my friends know that I'm a huge fan of that movie, and they actually got me as a Christmas gift. I think Geek actually sells the umbrellas. And they asked me, well, which color should we get you, blue or white? Like, fucking blue. Don't even bother with the white. Like, because my brain has that blue LED in my mind of just, you know, cross now. And I've always wanted that. Like, it's funny. Like, I'm such a noir freak, especially with Blade Runner. Like I'm a huge cyberpunk kind of guy. And there are certain movies that like I watched as a kid that I rented and kind of like got into, and Blade Runner was one of them, because I was always in, it was always in the anime section for some reason. It was always near everything else I was renting. I'm like, what's this? Oh, hey, that's Han Solo. I'm gonna rent that tape anyways. I put it in. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. I should be watching this. This is way over my head. And you know, when you're a kid, you watch those certain movies. Was there any, since we kind of grew up the same era, like what was the movie you watched as a kid that watching now, you totally get a new light?
Oh man. Well, you want to know what movie I really just had a kind of a revelation about? It's on Netflix. You know, we've talked about a lot of NSFW cause Brian famously hasn't seen it. And we've had, you know, we've wound up becoming friends with one of the stars, but Mallrats.
Yeah.
I rewatched that, and Kevin Smith movies were another one. I mean, that's another thing that I think also for people that grew up around when we did, you know, were, just tremendously influential.
When I saw Clerks, it was just like, that was awesome. Like, I laughed my ass off. I think my first movie was much, I'm guessing your first movie, much like mine, was Mallrats for some reason. Cause I know that's what happened for me, that I've rented Mallrats and then I went back to Clerks and I was like, that's awesome.
You want to know what? I'm having a hard time remembering exactly which order I watched them in, but I do know that it was around the time that a bunch of friends of mine for my birthday, they all chipped in and got me the shittiest possible DVD player that you could buy at the time, which I'm sure then was still around $100. I would rent shit from Blockbuster on Friday and Saturday nights, cause I was a loser, and I would watch, movies and stuff. And I wound up getting into Kevin Smith a lot because it was one of those things where guys who were, our age, we were just at the bottom of the demo. It was just like, if Clerks hit with a certain demographic, it was, 25 to 18 year olds, right? Just even with that movie specifically. And so we were probably around, 15, 16.
Yeah, we're definitely not the target audience. But
at the same time, that's what's cool about it, because you always want that thing that's just out of reach. So Clerks in the Kevin Smith movies was in that sweet spot where, it was just ready. We were just about to get into there. Here, can we pause for a second?
Sure.
Okay, hold on. Clerks, I mean, it counts with movies in general, but Clerks specifically was something that was I don't have an older brother, but it was the kind of shit that, you would have an older brother for.
See, that's
right?
Why I had a younger brother. So I was the older one. So it's funny if I think of all the stuff, as a kid, I watched all the animes and all the different sort of things I got access to somehow because I was the older brother. I totally get what you're saying. That kind of movie was I'm not supposed to be watching this. This is I'm hearing like 37 dicks and I'm hearing, dick jokes and all this stuff. I'm like, I shouldn't be watching this now, but this is too funny. Look, there's a Star Wars joke. I get that,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, I really like Star Wars, but I had never kind of heard it discussed. And that was kind of, the general flourish that Kevin Smith became famous for anyway. But, I guess right, here. So in terms of looking at a movie differently, Mallrats, I loved. I mean, I absolutely was obsessed with, Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy. Dogma, I was not as big of a fan of, when it first came out. But that was Dogma was the first Kevin Smith movie that I saw in theaters that I made an effort, me and my friends made an effort to go out and see. But anyway, so Mallrats, watching it, the big thing that I took away from it was remember when you were growing up and you would see some shit from the 80s and you'd be fucking Motley Crue, man. That shit is so 80s. And you're not saying you could either like or dislike it, whatever, but it was time stamped. It was dated. You rolled over Nikki Sixx and he had fucking 1987 stamped on his belly, right?
Right.
I never thought, I watched Mallrats and I'm like, holy shit. This is the 90s.
No, yeah, Mallrats is totally dated. I'm not even going to lie with. I'm going to totally agree with you. There's certain things from that era of the 90s that never escaped. It was funny. I was having a conversation at one point talking about that. Certain cartoon, certain shows that I watched on Nickelodeon totally feel like in the 90s. Mallrats, I will exactly agree. It never left the 90s because it was perfectly positioned as that movie to be in the 90s,
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, I mean, it was a movie of its era, and I don't think it tries to hide from it.
No,
the other
no.
thing that I took away from it was the two performances that really hold up for me is Jason Lee and Jason Mewes. And it was one of, like, one of the things where, like, you watch Jason Mewes and you're like, even then it was funny. Cause if you were to ask me back then, what do you think, what performances do you think will hold up? Although Rooker's amazing. Actually, no, let me take that back. Rooker's fucking amazing.
Well, that goes without saying. That's like Michael Rooker. The thing is, Michael Rooker, and I really didn't know his career. Like my first experience with him was definitely Mallrats, and it wasn't until recently that I've learned his sort of cinematic career and everything else. At that point, like, he had already been playing a shit ton of roles, and he'd already established
Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer was his big thing.
This is the problem. I didn't start getting into, like, knowing actors' careers until I went to college. Like, that's when I started actually, like, I joined, like, a film club. That's when I started getting really into cinematography and actually knowing storyline and pacing and actually analyzing a movie. And so at that point is when I started caring about, that's Michael Rooker, or, oh, that's Harrison Ford, or, oh, that's, you know, a Wes Anderson film. And it wasn't until then that I started knowing it. So I didn't even know, like that was my, like, when I heard the name Michael Rooker, like, when you guys had him on NSFW show, I was like, who's that? And you're like, that's the, you know, you said, like, this Mallrats is like, oh shit, it's that guy. And I,
Mr.
like,
Svenning.
Yeah, exactly. Svenning. And I know, you know, the guy gets shit palmed and the guy that says, you know, what the fuck's going on? And, like, I know that role in my mind and I can place him in that role. And that, and then you watch, and then I watch him, you know, in The Walking Dead. I'm like, this is totally different. Wow, that's amazing.
He's a fantastic actor.
You know, like, he's an amazing actor, you know.
Well, let me just say about his role in Mallrats, like, it's very, very, very hard to play a serious role in such a cartoonish movie, if that makes sense. Like, you can't just be serious. Like, I mean, you can't just roll in with, like, Hannibal Lecter.
No,
in Ace Ventura, right? But if you want to have the gravitas and be threatening, you have to be. I mean, it's like this very, very hard. You have to play a cartoon character playing a human, if that makes sense.
Well, that's the thing.
He does a great job of that.
There's a thin line that you walk across, especially in a Kevin Smith film when you're trying to be serious. Because, like, I mean, there are a lot of those scenes in certain movies, especially in Mallrats. Mallrats is the most comical, appropriately. I mean, and maybe that's what Kevin Smith was going for. I mean, when he went the movie. I mean, if you look at the cover, for example, it's a comic book. It has specific. Yeah. On there, it has the what's the fucking stamp that you had to get back in the day?
Comics code.
Yeah, Comics Code Authority, the CCA. You know, the Comics Code. It has a stamp on the case specifically on there. So, I mean, because, you know, Kevin Smith himself is a comic book fan. He grew up in that era. He grew up in that sort of mentality. So, you know, he plays all his jokes on that. And so, when you watch the movie of Mallrats, and you know, it has a lot of those sort of, you know, like, almost like Wile E. Coyote plans out of Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, making, I mean, you know, very specifically, yeah.
Yeah, very specifically those things where they'll literally, there's a scene where he busts out the utility belt and, like, you know, pulls a scene from Batman the movie, which, you know, it's great and it's a hilarious thing. But Rooker, as Svenning, like, he had that dual role of, well, I'm both the villain of this whole thing and one of the villains, and at the same time, I've got to look menacing, but this is a silly movie where I'm going to get fucking stink palmed and I'm going to be puking in a bag, you know, suffering from diphtheria, you know, like you've got to play it a certain way, and it's amazing how he did it. But you said basically that role, Jay Mewes.
Well, I would say, and really, I guess, like, if you asked me back then, like, which roles would hold up, I wouldn't have put Jason Mewes on that list because you just think, like, here's this fucking crazy asshole just doing a crazy asshole shtick. And he certainly is to a certain extent, but, like, it's awesome. Like, and it's still awesome. And in a movie where so many elements had kind of degraded to me, where, you know, things weren't fresh and you just kind of see that once you've seen a lot more movies, you're like, well, okay, well, that wasn't completely original. And certainly the hallmark of Kevin Smith movies are the dialogue and this, you know, very relatable, a cartoonish take on the relatable. But, like, where so many other things weren't what they seemed, I was just shocked that I looked back on Jason Mewes' performance and I'm like, fucking, this is as funny as it was the first time I watched this movie.
Well, man, that's the thing with Jason. It's funny. I think I remember the commentary track of that movie. I think Kevin had said in the past that like that specific film, like they didn't want to hire Jason Mewes originally.
Yeah.
Like I think they wanted to put like Seth Green in his role or something like that. I can't remember. I can't remember who it was, but like he fought for Jay. Like he totally fought for him because, you know, he wanted his friend in there and he wanted that. So he told Jason this whole thing. He's like, look, they want to replace you, man. So you got to fucking, you know, ball, you know, man up. None of this whole like clear the stage so you can dance kind of shit.
Yeah.
And apparently like the scene that it's funny, like I think I remember correctly, the scene that they were judging Jay on, Jason Mewes, was that whole it's a very small sequence, but he's behind stage, and you know, in front of the stage is I think Brian O'Halloran's character, Jason Lee, and I forget the actor's name to be honest.
Where Jeremy said, London.
Jeremy London. Yeah, Jeremy London, there we go. And in the behind the scenes you see Jason Mewes yell, "Do it, Doug," you know, because apparently that was a scene that like the exec watched him, like they watched him on to make sure, are we gonna keep this guy in the fucking movie?
Yeah.
Which it's amazing, you know, thinking back now, because you don't think Kevin Smith, you know, in a movie without Jason Mewes, especially if it's a Mewes Hugh kind of movie, it's hard to picture, you know, Jay and Silent Bob without Jay.
Yeah.
And so it was amazing that we almost lost that just because, you know, some Hollywood exec said, but
at the same time, like you really can't. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think if you watch Clerks and you're like, I want more of the Clerks guy and I want more of those Clerks characters. Like, I don't know how you can watch Clerks and not be like, well, Jason Mewes is one of the funniest, if not the funniest element of this.
Well, I mean, because like the thing is, and to bring up this whole thing like of the 90s, like that era of movies, there are some really good gems. Don't get me wrong. There's some great films that, but all the kind of like Hollywood movies had always like, okay, we need these certain actors. We need to hit these people. Like we need Tom Green. We need X person. We need Y person. And, you know, and I know, and they still do that now, and it's still done today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tom Green, I mean, you know.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love Tom Green.
No, I'm just talking about, like, movie-wise. I mean, he really, I guess he was in Road Trip. I fully understand that. I am sure that if I watch, like, American Pie now, which is a movie that I liked but I didn't love growing up, like, I'm sure it's a piece of dog shit.
It is. Like, I don't know if it's dog shit.
I'm sure I would hate American Pie.
Like, there's some scenes in American Pie that hold up. Like, my brother is a huge fan of that film. And there's certain things in American Pie that hold up and are pretty successful. I'll be honest, I'm a kind of a bigger fan of two than one. But that's like saying, I kind of like this better. But, I mean, like, if I say Tom Green.
Oh, I thought two was a mess. You don't want to know what? I think I might have actually, there might somewhere be a review. I remember reviewing it, but I forget where, whether it was for my high school paper or I wrote the Sun Sentinel, the local paper, which I eventually wound up working for, did like a teen section in the back of their entertainment pullout. And it would highlight high school writers. And I wrote for there, like my first ever like published in a newspaper clip was a review for the Red Hot Chili Peppers Californication. And to this day, I can't read more than two sentences from it without just cringing and wanting to slit my throat.
For what? You didn't like
it's
California?
It's so terrible. Oh, no. My writing is just so
awful. Well, that's every writer looks back at their old stuff.
Yeah. My mom has it framed, too. So I'll go, and it's always like, I'll go to her house and I'll get my taxes. We'll do my taxes or something. And like, you know, I'll be wandering around the office just looking at shit. And it's just like old pictures. And it's like a house of horrors. Like, me at 8. And then, you know, my shittily written bread. I'm so pompous. You want to know what? It's not even the writing. It's how pompous I am.
But like what? Did you give did you say Californication was like Red Hot Chili Peppers, like magnum opus or something?
No, it wasn't even that. That I understand, because that's just the folly of youth. Like, the worst, it's like that. The lead of it is like, it's like there were a time in the 90s, or like there was an element, like just like a hearkening to a bygone day when music was good. And it's like, you were fucking 8, idiot. Like, what the fuck do you know about anything? Like, and it was like basically talking about how much I could have said, you know, like, Red Hot Chili Peppers, this album's good. I really like their earlier albums, which is true. I did. I like their earlier albums.
But it's just, I mean, like
no, I had to come with this air of superiority. It's like, oh my, I wanted to fucking I just wanted to, you know, travel through time and, you know, explode in the desert naked like the Terminator. Just fucking throw my head under a back of a moving car.
But I mean, like, we all liked weird, we all liked dumb shit back as kids. Like, I'll tell, like for example.
Well,
like,
no, but that's the thing. Like, I actually, with my points of view. I just hated the fact that I had to pretend like I was fucking like some wizened old music.
But that's what you do when you that's what you do when you wrote things like that. Like that's what you did as a kid. Like I have read some of my you know, my older stuff from high school. I've read some of my stuff older stuff from college, and it's like, what the fuck was I, you know, saying there? Like I read some shit I wrote as a freshman. But I mean, everyone grows as a writer, especially when you write as much as you do, either in journalism school or English school, you know, English major, you write a shit ton. And it's funny. It's funny, I think, about it, because if I think back to my days in college, I always had like friends who are business majors or science majors, something else, and they'd always kind of like, oh my god, I don't want to write this paper at all. Like, oh, what, how long is it? Like 5 pages. And like, that's nothing. I'm writing a 10-page paper like tomorrow night that's due in like on Monday. And it's weird. Like I think of all the writing I've had to do and all the shitty writing I've done over my years. That it just that's it happens. I mean, you can't hold yourself against it. Like, why do you hold yourself?
Oh, no. I mean, well, here's the thing. I mean, I like to criticize myself a lot, but I'm totally at peace with my self-loathing. I like to think that I have a very, very healthy, a healthy, if active, case of self-loathing. And I think I recommend it to everybody. I think, you know, you need to know you're a piece of shit, but also be at peace with it.
Oh, yeah. You know? Totally. Like, I mean, like
you know, yeah, I don't know. Especially, you know, I think it makes me more confident. I know that. Like, I know that I'm able to walk into a room and be, you know, more of a presence, you know, or even when it comes to stuff like this, like doing NSFW or weird things or an interview with a guy like you. Like, if I didn't know exactly where I hated myself, then I wouldn't be able to you know, to go anywhere.
No,
I mean, like unsettled terrain.
I mean, you do need to hate yourself. I mean, like
everyone needs to.
No, I agree.
Everyone's terrible.
I know. I totally agree with you.
Like, oh no, not me. I'm a really nice guy. I remember I got into an argument with not an argument, but a discussion with Odakta once.
For those of you who don't know, Odakta would be Owen J.J. Stone.
Owen J.J. Stone, aka
Odakta on Twitter.
Yeah, and then it's Odocta. You know, like
For the million, and for those who are out there that don't even know that, there's a just look up what was this fucking thing, the dove guy, was that what he did on YouTube that actually got
he did a response to the Old Spice guy where he was the dove guy because he's fat and the other guy's in shape.
I remember somebody actually I showed someone that for some reason. And they were like, why is this fat guy doing that? And I had to kind of explain to him, which is always sounds weird when you have to explain the meme. Like, I always feel like a total – like, I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. But I even feel more geeky and nerdy when I have to – like, there's one thing I hate about life is when I have to explain the joke, because that's when you realize, you know, it's really – it's funny only if you don't have to explain it. And it's like there's a certain joke I always make in New Year's. I have friends of mine live in Michigan, since I'm originally from there, and they always get the joke and run with it, where I will call them and ask and demand to know what the future's like. And they'll always make up the craziest shit, like there's laser beams, we've cured cancer, you know, the zombies are coming, because it's so much fun, because, you know, technically they're in the future and technically it's a time zone joke.
Yeah.
The worst time I've ever had to explain a time zone joke, and I realized how dumb it was and how fucking asinine it was to even laugh at it, was I was talking to this Japanese professor that my friend and I hung out with, which was bizarre, but he's on point. And I made the joke that Japan was in the future, literally.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, you know, it goes across the dateline.
They fucking are.
They fucking are. Literally, they are about 14 hours ahead of me. It's tomorrow
and
there.
It's a scientific fact that Asians move through time faster than whites.
Exactly, because they are technically across the internet. Anyways.
They're lighter than air. And they move within the universes like a gang of hooligans.
They can fold space and time like they've conquered
like so
antimatter.
Much origami.
Exactly. They have conquered the antimatter. Like what they're doing there at the CERN Institute, Asians have already done in magnitudes on their own, and they, you know, cured cancer. Exactly. Point is, I had to explain this whole time zone joke to him, and it completely fell flat. Like, he didn't get what I meant, and then I kept going like, you see, they're 14 hours ahead, and that means in the future. He's like, oh, and nothing. And I realized in there how stupidly fucking stupid it was to even have a time zone joke. Like much like yourself loathing and that, I was like, fuck, why do I even give a shit about that joke? Like, that's totally retarded to just talk about how Japan's in the future. Literally, who fucking cares? No one knows what you're talking about, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, you know. Well, that's true. You know, no one can care, so yeah, at least you know it.
I mean, that's why I know, like I had to be honest with myself. And like it's funny when it comes to those jokes that fall flat. I'm not sure. Have you ever had that happen where you've had to like explain a joke?
Oh, fuck. God, all the time. I actually, what's it called? When I used to do, I did stand-up comedy very briefly in college, and now it's, I would wind up telling a joke and then explaining it on stage. But like, I did it funny, like I was funny enough at it sometimes that people would laugh and they would think it was part of the act, but it was really just me explaining it to people. And I listened back recently, or I mean within the last year to it, I recorded myself once, which maybe at some point I'll put out on the internet if people give a shit, but like
I'm pretty sure people give a shit.
I'm almost positive. I mean, it's like, I don't want to come off as conceited, but you know,
like, if someone's gonna, if nothing more, if someone's gonna
then to mock me and you know
to use it for future fuel of random NSFW jokes.
Oh, certainly so. Yeah, no, absolutely. So and like there's a moment I think that was in there where it was like I had this kind of aside and I didn't realize then that it got probably the biggest laugh of the bit, and it was like, it's funny because that tick, and it was like, I was telling a joke about, cause I did what, you know, really is horrible for comedians. Yeah, I wound up just writing almost all of my material for this contest about news stories that had happened that day. Like there was a shooting on an Indian reservation in like South Dakota or something. And I wound up telling this, I forgot what the joke was. Oh, the joke was about, I don't know. It was very stupid. It was about how that he was a Native American white supremacist. And I told like this scenario where like at the white supremacist convention, there were like white supremacists who didn't agree, or like they wouldn't sit with the Native American white supremacists, and then other white supremacists would yell at the racist white supremacists because they were being inappropriate. It was very convoluted and ridiculous, but like, so I'm telling the story because the news peg is that this kid killed a bunch of other people. And I'm like, well, you know, the funny part about this story, and like I accidentally said that, I didn't mean to say that, and I was like, and by the funny part I mean he killed himself and 14 people, ha ha ha, and like that got this laugh, and it got a way bigger laugh than the actual joke I was telling. But it's one of those things that I found when I listened back to it, it's like, oh well, like that's such a bigger part of what I do broadcasting now, like those little I'm just gonna run a 50 miles an hour one direction. And if I accidentally step in something, then I'll just quickly make a one-line joke about it and then keep going. Like that's like kind of my, if I do have any kind of broadcasting style, that would be it. And it's just, it's funny how stuff like that, you know, built up from just me being on stage and, you know, making mistakes and reacting to it.
Right. I mean, I guess that's going to, I mean, God, I wish I could hear that joke. But I mean,
I built it up now. It's not even going to be funny. I mean, I've told you, like, if you would have laughed at any element, you would have laughed at me retelling it because it was basically what I said. Oh, God. Now I'm going to have to, Jesus. I'm going to have to fucking.
Yeah, you got to post
it. I'm going
to
give you a recording of fucking Creepy Santa, and now I got to post.
You got to post this joke.
I called it. I made it. I made CDs out of it, and it's called Sometimes the Bear Eats You.
Wait. You've actually, like, made CDs.
I made CDs out of it. I recorded it. A friend of mine recorded it. He had a sound engineering class, and he recorded my stand-up, and you mean, Jesus, I have a couple really probably very embarrassing elements of my college comedy. I have a CD of my stand-up, and I have an actual album, a sketch comedy album with the sketch comedy group I was in fuck, I'm gonna have to release both of these, aren't I? Now that
yeah,
I mentioned,
yeah, you got you're just
wow. See, this is filled with a lot of jury news pegs for your podcast. You're gonna get chat realm is gonna be fucking all over this. This is like inside the actor studio.
Well, that's because the thing is that that's the funny thing is that that's kind of what I wanted to go with, you know, talking to you, because you know you. It's funny, like when it comes to like people that I respect that do a ton of content and that make content, and they have kind of gotten from where they were to where they are now and how they got to it. And you know, when I started, like I'll be like, when I started watching you, Justin, it was during your early days of the BB Live show, which
sure.
I fell into because of the whole, you know, Brian Brushwood and everything else. Yeah. And I'm watching this whole show, and I remember you made this point at South by Southwest. Like I'll be honest, I laughed my ass off when you're on there. And it's funny, like I have friends of mine who love Scam School, love Brian. I'm like, you gotta watch NSFW show. Watch this guy. Look at the pairings between him and Justin Robert Young. And they'll look and they'll go, why doesn't Brian have his spikes? I'm like, you're not getting it. I mean, look at this guy. This guy's hilarious. I mean, they have this like almost like odd couple kind of you know motif going on here, and it's hilariously funny. And I remember you brought it up at South by Southwest when I think it was I can't remember when you said it, but I think it might have been at the Dignation show, where you had said that people that would come to you and say, "Oh my God, you're Justin Robert Young," were almost like this. I forgot what band you had said at the time. It was some 90s band. I really forgot the damn name.
Oh, no. It was the String Cheese Incident.
Exactly. But, like, you had, like, this whole, like if you know me, it's like knowing the bassist from, like, this 90s band, which no one knows bassist from.
The jam band. The bassist for the String Cheese Incident.
Exactly. Which is hilariously funny because, you know, the people that knew you with that, I mean, now so you're, you know, you might get known more because at least at the show
I'll probably get known a little bit more because of the
OG Conan.
You know, been on Twit longer, and I've done like the Dragon Con coverage, and we did the, you know, we got the best of 2010 thing. So
yeah, I mean,
and weird things. I mean, like, you know, I'll probably get it a little bit more this time, but Brian, I mean, I guess because I got it more at Dragon Con than I did at South by Southwest.
Well, because I've asked Brian at past times when I've talked with him, you know, like
he's like an actual fucking celebrity.
Well, that's not even that. I mean, like, first off, he's known in Austin. Like it's you know, living in Austin, I've heard people actually mention Brian Brushwood more times than I can say, just because he's a known person in Austin. He's been on TV. He has that sort of thing. I mean, he does things like that. But like, I could go to my mom and say, "Hey, do you know who Brian Brushwood is? Who's that?" You know, I had to kind of explain to her what that is. But Brian, I've always asked, like, I asked him at one point, like, you know, like, when was it that people started going, "Oh my God, you're Brian Brushwood"? Like, was it before Scam School or after Scam School? He said to me at one point that, you know, more people recognize me for Scam School than, say, for his magic act. Like, is that the same thing for you, that more people recognize you? Like, when people do recognize you, is it more for Weird Things and NSFW
nobody recognizes me for anything?
Well, let's say this. Like, I mean, like, maybe that's always, it's hard because, you know, people who do recognize you are people that, you know, are watching you on a daily basis. These are a weekly basis, and these are people that, like when it came to like Dragon Con, like did anyone like were you just like walking around the convention, like no one said, "Oh my God, you're Justin Robert Young," or is it just you're just kind of slipped through the cracks, and you know?
Well, I mean, a lot of it was like I was there with Brian, so you know, it's very easy to put me in context. Like, if you kind of think you know who I am, but I'm also screaming and yelling next to Brian Brushwood, it's very, it would be akin to like John Wayne, like walking around in chaps and you know,
look at me on the loud one. Like, "Oh, you're Justin." That's right.
Yeah. So it's like, if I'm walking around like Dragon Con, there was a lot of me drinking and walking around next to Brian and yelling. So it was like, "Oh, he's that guy, you know, the one that drinks and yells next to Brian Brushwood on my computer screen." But also the other thing that helped with that was that we did the live show there. So there were a lot of people. What really helped us at Dragon Con was that we were the only live Twit branded thing. So like, besides like the coverage that was roving, we were the only thing that was like on a schedule that had the Twit stink on it. So we had a lot of people that were Twit fans that wound up coming to see the show and, you know, putting us over capacity and having to turn people away. And so there were a lot of people that, like, you know, came up and said hi, and then they liked the show, but it was after seeing it there.
Okay.
I would suspect now that there would, I'll probably get it a little bit more. But again, the thing about being recognized is like, you know, Brian gets recognized a lot because he does a video podcast. You know, Scam School is a video thing. So it's like, if you're going to experience it, you got to look at it. NSFW is not really that, you know. I mean, we far more people listen to us than look at us. So
see, but the thing is that this is the one thing that I've always hear that argument from you guys. That I mean, I know you know your numbers better than I do, and your audio, yeah, and whatnot, and you know what gets downloaded more or what gets seen more. I always feel that when it comes to your show, that it's more of a live experience, and it's supposed to be a live experience. And it's not that you can't watch it after the fact, you can, but there's just something about watching that show on Twit that makes it the very much you had to be there to watch it. It's almost like watching the live interview of a star, like live, and then they're like, well, we have to cut this stuff out because he said fuck or he said shit or anything like that. And I feel like NSFW is one of those shows that, yes, while you can watch it, you know, with audio and you do get the jokes and whatnot, it is an entirely visual show. And even more so, it's an entirely live show. Like, you're very much like, I know you, like when did you and Brian make that conscious decision? Like there's one thing you do about your show is that you always interact with the fans in one capacity or another. At what point did you make the decision? Like, we have to do that every single episode.
Well, all right, hold on. Wait, well, real quick. Let me address the first part. I think for a certain kind of fan, it needs to be a live show. You know, I think for Chat Realm, and for some of our most dedicated fans, they got to listen to it live and they got to see it. But at the same time, what really has surprised me is the more, like, I'll talk to friends of mine, like my old roommate that used to live down here with me in South Florida and now lives in Minnesota. Like, he's like an every episode listener, but like, you know, he's not Chat Realm. Yeah. I think like there's different people have different relationships with your content. And for some people, they really like that brand of lunacy, and we do a good enough job explaining the visuals, and you know, they just enjoy that kind of energy. But they also like listening to it on their own time, on the treadmill, and they don't have the same relationship that a lot of, you know, that we have with like Chat Realm. But I think that's fine. You know, it's a big tent. In terms of your second question, or the second point, when did we consciously decide to make it an interactive show? Fuck. I mean, Brian made that decision when he decided to take my calls regularly, and you know, eventually I became a co-host of the show.
Yeah, I was actually gonna ask that because this has been bugging me for like the longest time. Since I mean, sure. I know you cover the Magic Beat, and I know you do, and I know that
iTricks.com.
My question is like, how the fuck did you hook up with Brian Brushwood? Like at what point, like did you just like call and be a live show one day and you're like, oh, hey, I'm Justin Robert Young. I cover the Magic Beat.
Here's the timeline. I first talked to Brian when Scam School launched. I covered it for the site. And I, you know, I got along talking with him fine. And then I can't remember, you know, it was the next, the dime that really, I mean, the seeds of my love affair with Brian Brushwood were sown was I came up when he was first doing Halloween Horror Nights. Or sorry, it was the second time he was doing it, the first time he was doing it by himself. And that was a couple of years ago. And I came up to interview him and I just really, really, really got along with him. And we wound up you know, going back to the house he was renting. It was the first time I had met Bonnie and his two daughters. And we basically just stayed up for a while I was royally, royally pissing off my girlfriend at the time. And we just fucking drank a few beers and just shot the shit. And we had a lot of stuff in common. I think, you know, politically we're kind of more on the same, level. And, you know, we like a lot of the same shit and, you know, we talked a bunch. And then, you know, he started doing, you know, the BB live shows, which, you know, initially were, you know, very much just kind of an outgrowth of like Brian. I mean, like you said, like when was that conscious decision made to interact with the fans? That's all BB live show was.
No, you know, I know that. And, but I mean, like, first,
well, I think, well, here, the progression is this. Brian wanted a way to interact with his fans that he had accrued through scam school and doing the live magic stuff, and wanted a way to keep in touch with them. So he starts doing BB Live Show, and BB Live Show was a many different formats. You know, if you really go back and you watch a lot of the super early ones, a lot of it, you know, some of it's just kind of call in radio show. Some of it's just let's discuss the issues of the day. A lot of it, I mean, at one point there's just, he does kind of a magic, lecture sort of with Michael Landmark.
Like, I remember like some of those episodes, like looking in the past, I remember some I've watched for just like, let's just do 3 hours of shit. And they're just like this long, almost like the Inagata De Vita, like extended version of Brian Brushwood's show.
Yeah, but and really, it was communication. It was recorded communication as opposed to a presentation. And it was like, hey, fucking Jeff Cannata's on. Let's talk to Jeff Cannata about whatever Jeff Cannata wants to talk about for 3 hours. and that was very, very cool. So one of the people that would make a point in calling in was me. And at the time, I was listening to specifically talk radio wise a lot of Opie and Anthony and a lot of Ron and Fez. And that's on XM satellite radio. And I was really, really, I liked doing that. And I'd been doing podcasts for a while, but I had not done anything kind of comedy wise. And so there was just sort of this very natural progression of, I was coming on. And then at some point I was just talking to Brian after the show. And I'm like, hey, listen, I got a couple ideas if you want to do them. And he's like, ideas, let's go. And so I kept coming up with ideas, and Brian kept wanting to do them, and all the ideas, included me. So, BB Live Show, that was where BB Live Show kind of became.
So essentially, what you're telling me is that basically you'd said, hey, Brian, I got some ideas, just throwing them out. And Brian's like, show me. And you kind of almost like stacked the deck in your favor because each of your ideas had you in it.
Well,
or is it just?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think if I had an idea, I'd want to be part of it.
No, of course. I say that jokingly that you stacked the deck.
No, but I very much think that there's a lot to be said about calling your own shot. You know, if no one wants to give you a shot, make your own. I wasn't gonna wait until Brian. For me calling in, Brian was like, "You are the most funny caller we've ever had on the BB Live Show. You, sir, are my new co-host." Like, that was never going to happen.
Because
that's ridiculous to think of. But, like, if I say, hey, I got an idea, we should do this, or we should do that, or, it keeps me in the picture. And that was, a lot of what happened. And then when it came down to SFW show, that was, and still is, kind of the process of how we put together the show. Me and Brian try and get on the phone, at least a couple hours before the show, and kind of go ahead with it. And
see, I hate to say, like, I don't believe you guys when you say that. Like it's funny for those that you always say that you guys like spent only 2 hours preparing, and like you only spend like I don't believe that. Like, I believe that there is a little bit of prep prior.
If we say it, it's true. Well, like, if we say this is something that we came up with 2 hours ago, we are not bullshitting.
Well, I guess my question is this: and since we're almost out of time, I do have a couple two geek questions after this to ask you, just because I've always wanted to know these sort of things. Sure. Like, you guys always say you plan 2 hours. You always plan like an hour ahead, and you pull it out of your ass.
We don't always do it, but it does happen. Like, right. We're not proud of it. That's almost more of a disclaimer.
But it's always like, we pulled this out of our ass. But even Brian, like in the BB Live Show, was showing that this is, like, he'd always have the whole toddler beating on a drum line prior it to show that this is not as polished as Scam School, because Scam School has a budget to it. Which I don't necessarily agree or disagree that. I'll be honest, I was always a bigger fan of the BB Live Show than I was of Scam School. I mean, I love Scam School, don't get me wrong, but there's something about that.
I've only heard good things. I look forward to watching it.
Well, the thing is that when it came to that show, it was just sort of almost like, let's just it felt like this was the product of the generation that watched Ren and Stimpy. And I guess that's the only way I can put it. Like, this whole just madhouse of content where you have all these sort of in jokes, all these sort of comedy things that you don't, if you go into it, like, as a person that doesn't know who Kuhan is or any of these sort of in jokes, it's like, what the fuck are they talking about?
We try to keep those, like, I try to keep it to a minimum. I mean, and a lot of it is kind of being influenced by talk radio and comedy talk radio specifically, because you know, you want to do something that is like, you want to always have your hardcore fan base. You want to always feed your hardcore fan base because they're the most relatable for you personally while you're doing it. But at the same time, you have to be mindful that every show is somebody's first show. And you know, for, you want to throw enough kind of Kuhan references in there to make them like, I wonder who Kuhan is.
But that's the thing.
You don't want to make it, we don't want to do like, now our new bit, let's think of 14 things that are dumb about Kuhan's face.
But I mean, like the thing was, is that me going into those shows, especially BB Live shows, since I'm just coming on the knowledge of Brian Brushwood, that it was just this bizarre sort of collection of content. And I think that's what drove me more to love it, you know, besides the fact that it was Justin Robert, you know, Justin Robert, it was beside the fact it was Brian Brushwood. It was more that it was just sort of zany, almost, you know, like this is like this is like it's like talk radio, but this is the geeky talk radio. This is the sort of like, these are the guys that would make the same pop culture jokes that I would make, and these are the same guys that I could have, I would hear those sort of things. Like I would hear, you know, like recently in one of your episodes, which I have to compliment you on, bringing up the fact of Captain Jean-Luc Picard's alter ego from a holodeck program that I know in my head, I know exactly what episode that's from. I know exactly that holodeck program.
To be honest, that was a chat realm suggestion. I could not claim brilliance.
See, that's why, because like that was such a brilliant thing, and it was literally like, oh my god, that's hilarious. That is so specific referential Star Trek that I can picture the shot in my head. I can picture, you know, I'm just leaving. I'm not dressed properly. Like I know those lines because I watched Star Trek religiously as a kid.
I am a huge fan of shitty holodeck episodes of The Next Gen.
Well, there's so many shit holodeck episodes.
I have a guilty pleasure for shitty holodeck episodes for this reason. Just to see how many creative ways they can get Counselor Troy in a box. Like, and they went through every fashion in history so they could find, like, fuck! Like, oh, we want to do a Roman episode. Sorry, man, no bodices. Fucking, we can't get those tits up to her neck, so we can't fucking do that. Like, oh, Old West, bodices, yes. Renaissance, yes, bodice. Anyway, sorry.
No, I agree with you. Like it's funny, like, that's my, like, it's funny, that's one of my guilty pleasures, too, is just the shitty holodeck episodes. But when you bring those sort of things up, like the part of my brain, it's the same part of my brain that loves, like, the Clerks cartoon. It's the same part of my brain that loved undergrads growing up. It was almost that in joke that exists that people like me and people that watch that content, you know, very much so.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because like that is very, very much the meeting of me and Brian, is that Brian's BB Live show concept initially, before I became a regular on it, was all, it was 100% interaction. And, you know, if I were to do a comedy podcast, I would have never done it like that. Like, I would have tried to write, you know, the funniest, and fuck, you know, I actually did. I did a podcast, and I have to release that now too.
Yeah, now you're digging yourself a hole here. I know. You're just,
and
like,
so it would be recorded. It would be sketch comedy. You know, I would write a thing and I would perform it, and I would hope that people liked it, and I would make really, really, really ridiculous, you know, in jokes with this kind of, like, I wanted this sort of like very geeky Dennis Miller vibe, where it's like, you know, if I make a joke about Guile's theme music from Street Fighter, I'm just going to leave it there. And if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. Knowing that the people who get it and they know, they're like, do, like, then they're going to fucking really laugh. Like, you know, if I make some joke about that, like, that they're going to really get it and they're going to love it and they're going to love this program. So that is NSFW and BB Live Show as its predecessor is very, very much that meeting of the minds of like, hey, let's make this super, super interactive show that has these kind of, you know, just fucking drop it and leave it reference, rapid fire sort of style to it.
All right. As my last and final question, since we're almost out of time here, two questions. One, Star Trek or Star Wars? Since you've now brought up both sides, and now I know, you got to know where your alliance lays.
I've always been more of a Star Wars guy for this reason. Number one, I clear the fuck out whenever anybody, if somebody, especially being on Twit and shit, if anybody wants to challenge me on anything, I will surrender immediately because I am so, to this day, for some reason, I am just so nervous about people calling me out on fucking being a poser or not knowing enough about Star Trek and Star Wars. So it's like, I've always been captivated more by Star Wars and Star Trek. And I would tend to align myself more with Star Wars just because I've definitely watched all those movies a billion times where it's like, I have not seen enough. I haven't seen every episode of Next Generation or the original series or, you know, any of the TV shows. I haven't seen all the Star Trek movies. So it's like, I would definitely be a Star Wars guy. Although there are elements of the Star Trek series that I just think are so much funnier than elements of the Star Wars series, just because Star Trek took itself more seriously than Star Wars did.
Yeah, no, for sure. I asked that just because you bring up the shitty holodeck episodes, and like in my mind, I'm like, God, is he a Star Wars guy or does he?
Oh no, definitely a Star Wars guy. Although there were like the shit like shit like the holodeck and Q for some reason.
Oh fucking Q! No Q.
Fucking kills me just because of that. Just that character is just so silly. But really, it's like, The holodeck episodes are, it really is almost this overindulgent exercise of lazy writing.
Well, because like there's always the bizarre, like the thing is that like it's funny, whenever I see John DeLancing these days, the actor that played Q, I can never separate Q from him. And I know I've seen him in like shitty movies and I'd be like, what the fuck's Q doing in this film? Like, oh, wait a minute, that's John DeLancey. That's actually the actor. Like, I can't, for example, separate Scott Bakula from his character in Quantum Leap or his character in Star Trek. Like, even when I saw him in Enterprise, I was like, what the fuck's Sam, Dr. Sam Beckett doing in fucking in Star Trek. You know,
I wonder if he's gonna wake up and he'll have to comically realize he's a woman in lingerie.
Like, there's all these certain sci-fi actors that I'll see in different things because I've watched so much sci-fi content that I'll like flip on when it came out Battlestar Galactica, when like Richard what's his fucking
Edward
name?
James Olmos.
Not Edward James Olmos, of course, but that goes without saying. Like, I always know him as fucking.
I was gonna say, because you're Blade Runner.
Exactly. I always know him as I think Guido is the character's name, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I always know him as that. But I was thinking more along of Dean Stockwell and seeing him and going, what the fuck's Al doing in Battlestar Galactica? It's so many times that I'll see those characters in so many different things. Like, there's a very funny episode of SG, like, I was getting into Stargate SG-1 at later seasons. They like Richard Dean Anderson kind of left and did his own thing, and at one point, one of the actors, like literally all the actors, the two main characters from Farscape, come into the SG-1 world, and I'm like, what the fuck are they doing here? Like, they should be tooling. Like, it's ridiculous. But thinking of the fucking holodeck episodes and Q episodes, like you say, lazy writing. Like, there's always the same same kind of concept where like the holodeck program person becomes slightly real and starts to fuck with the Enterprise. Like,
oh yeah. Well, but it's also like
Moriarty comes out of nowhere because
of
like,
of course, it's ridiculous. And it's just one of those things where it's like, there were a bunch of writers were sitting around and they're like, we have to write episode. Fucking how many episodes? Oh Jesus. All right. Well, we'll do this. How many do I have left? Fuck. 3 episodes? Jesus Christ. All right. Let's just holodeck the shit out of this.
Because that's
just... All right. Let's do Old Time Chicago. They had bodices then, right? They wore bodices? Good. And it's always like some fucking ridiculous, and it's always the same thing where it malfunctions.
The safety protocols go away, so the guns are real and shit like that. Like, it's always the same plot. That's why I laugh so hard, because they've never, like, they're always the same fucking thing.
No, I love those though. I love the holodeck episodes.
All right, my last question before I let you go. Do you really have a joke on the Guile theme? Because if you do, I'm kind of curious now what it is.
Oh, no, no. I was just trying to think.
See, that's why I was hoping they'd be like, yeah, I got this really awesome joke with the Guile famous where you put that underneath. Where in the
no,
Guile,
okay, we can make up lyrics, though. That would be funny.
Let's see if I can really, like, I could probably sing
that. I am Guile, I have a flat top, and I'm in the military.
God damn it. Now I got the thing stuck in my head. Justin, thank you for coming on this show.
I am not gay, but if I was, you wouldn't be allowed to ask me.
God, Guile is America. We always made that joke with some friends of mine that Guile, like, we always, for some reason, having we play a lot of Super Street Fighter 4 here, and sure, we always make the joke that Guile is like the epitome of America. Like, there's a really funny thing for those who have played this game. Maybe I'm not sure you played this one, Capcom vs. SNK 2. Like,
okay, no, okay. I haven't. No.
That's all right. What's it was a combination of Capcom characters and SNK characters, things like King of Fighters, Samurai Showdown.
No, I do. That was that a cabinet arcade?
I don't know if they made a cabinet of it. They did, but I don't know if it ever came out in the States in the cabinet. It probably did, you know, like any other cabinet.
I remember seeing that, though.
Okay. Yeah. So, because it's a Japanese game and they didn't hire American voice actors, it's so like, if you get a chance to hear the sound effects for Guile, they are hilarious. Like each character has a taunt, right? And the best taunt is Guile's. And he says, come on. He says, come on, rookie, in like the deepest, most Japanese accent where it's like, come on, rookie. Like, it sounds hilariously awesome. He was like, he's like, Sonic Boom. Because it's a Japanese voice actor putting Guile tonations.
That's awesome.
He's like, mission start. And it's hilariously funny. And I'll always think in my head that is what Japan thinks of us. Is like, that's what Capcom said. Fuck, we need to put an American guy. We already have a Ken. But Ken's already doing karate. Fuck. Let's make a military guy, and let's make him really fucking, let's make him really tough, and like tattoo the fucking American flag on his side on the fucking bicep. Like, that is what Japan thinks of us.
I love it. I'm proud. I'm proud to be an American with Guile as the theme song. I think we should change the Star Spangled Banner to the Guile theme.
Justin, thanks for coming on this show.
We ended on a joke about the Guile theme.
Exactly. Justin, if anything you want to plug to the viewers out there of all the things you plugged today?
Oh, Christ on a cracker. Listen, if you like me, follow me on the Twitter. I mean, we're doing a million fucking things, and like, you know, we got a lot of like non-show kind of announcements coming up, including a couple things that are podcast related. So follow Justin R. Young on Twitter. And otherwise, in terms of stuff that we haven't talked about, I mean, obviously NSFW, iTrix for Magic News, Weird Things, the website for your reading pleasure, the podcast for your audio pleasure. And if you are a YouTuber, head on over to youtube.com/weirdthingsTV, which is probably the thing that is most like what I'm doing here. It's kind of most sort of just unhinged me.
See, I'm just waiting for you to make the Home and Garden show soon. Because that's the next show I want to see, the Jury Home and Garden show, where it's like you and Martha Stewart, you know, doing this. Or better yet, it's like you and, like, you know, this old house bullshit. Like, that's what I'm waiting for next.
Like Home Improvement? Yeah. Like, I'm trying to find the load-bearing element of a wall?
Exactly.
Where's the cunting load-bearing element in this house?
Exactly.
This is horse shit.
Fuck this show, and you just walk off.
Anyway, so you want to use a ball peen hammer.
Anyways, till next time, take care, and I'll have another random geek on where I talk about something entirely random. Later.